in a world full of straight people. Aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race? RuPaul's Drag Race, say the best drag queen wins. And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
Start your engines and join me in the new mobile game, RuPaul's Drag Race Superstar. May the best superstar win. Available now.
Folks, we are Dave Holmesless today, but never fear. We have a very, very special guest. And I'm sorry Dave's not here, but I'm frankly very happy to have her all to myself. She is true World of Wonder royalty. She's a Drag Race All-Stars finalist. She's also been in Hocus Pocus 2 and Dumplin', starring Jennifer Aniston. She's the author of the new book, Southern Fried Sass, and her live show, The Broadsway, is coming to the Green Room 42 in New York, February 10th through 12th. Ginger Minj, welcome to the show.
Hi. Oh my gosh. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for being here. We were saying before we started recording, you have chosen to spend January in snowy Chicago. How's that going?
Yes. Well, it's my third year in a row doing that. It's actually, it's fine. I love it. You know, I grew up in Florida, so the snow is still kind of magical and exotic for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to look at it through the window from the Airbnb.
That's a great place to do it. Yeah. And while you're tucked away in your Airbnb, anything that you're watching or consuming or streaming or binging at the moment?
Well, aside from trying to keep up with every franchise of Drag Race right now, I am also in the midst of like binging Smothered. I love A Mama's Boy. And oh gosh, there's a Sisters one too. So I'm like all on these like dysfunctional relationship kind of shows right now, which make me feel, frankly, better about my life choices. And I am obsessed. My number one show right now is 1,000-Pound Sisters.
Oh, okay. That's the only one that you've mentioned that I've actually heard of.
Well, honestly, it's the only one that I've ever heard of. I was watching something else on, I think, on Max. And all of a sudden, Smothered pops up. I'm like, well, what is Smothered? Let me put it on. And of course, I get sucked in because it's so like trashy and over the top and crazy.
Oh my God.
It's like the worst parts of Drag Race. Just as many rhinestones and glitter, but none of the tact and none of the heart. So I get sucked in and I watch that. And then that ends and it leads right into I Love a Mama's Boy, which is like the same thing, but from the male perspective. It's just mind-blowing.
Give me a log line for Smothered. What is it?
So Smothered, it's mother-daughter duos who are too close for comfort. They shower together. They sleep together. They do everything in their lives together. They dress alike. They enter beauty pageants together. They do literally anything and everything that is probably something that a mother and daughter should never do together.
Wow. Okay. So now I'm seeing the through line that leads to 1,000-Pound Sisters.
Yes. Well, 1,000-Pound Sisters, I've been obsessed with since season one. They're on season five now? And I got into that because I used to watch My 600-Pound Life. And I know everybody's listening to this. They're like, oh my God, do you watch anything of substance? My thing is, I watch it because I've struggled with my weight my entire life. And I know what that can do to you emotionally. So I watched My 600-Pound Life just to kind of see if there was anything I could glean from the advice they were given by the doctors and whatever. But the thing about 600-Pound Life is it's one episode. You never see or hear from these people again for the most part. 1,000-Pound Sisters is 5 years into this family's journey. And of course, it starts as weight loss, but then it's so much more from there. It really humanizes these people. And it, you watch them and you go, I've been there. I understand that. I totally get that struggle. So now I feel like I'm really invested in them as a family as well. So I love it. It's trashy.
And I think I saw it. And but it also sounds riveting. I mean, I think I saw in People magazine recently, the 1,000-pound sisters are doing pretty well. Am I wrong?
Yeah, they're doing great. Yeah. Amy was the first one that got the surgery. She dropped a lot, but then she ended up having two babies back to back really quickly. So her weight is kind of like, her weight has taken the back burner to like this postpartum depression that she's going through this year, plus her divorce that she's going through this year. Like, she's going through so much and trying to not even lose weight, but maintain what she'd already lost. So that's kind of interesting to watch. And then, of course, Tammy, who was, you know, over 700 pounds when the show premiered, she finally, after almost dying several times, got her life together. She had the weight loss surgery. She's lost hundreds of pounds and is doing great, and was like the one who was the villain of the show. Nobody liked her because she was so frustrating, but all of a sudden she's like the moral compass, and she's the level-headed one who is trying to keep the peace between everybody else. It's like watching Drag Race. Like, you see all the different facets of these people that make them heroes and make them villains all at the same time.
Speaking of Drag Race, I mean, I'm sure you're asked this every day. We don't have to dwell on it, but just any top line thoughts on the current season.
The current season, I have to say, I'm actually a little bit behind right now. So I've been kind of trying to keep up through clips online because we've been in the midst of all these shows. I just got over having pneumonia 3 weeks ago. Yeah, I'm trying to catch up on real life while doing my shows and keep up with Drag Race. But I just have to say, how can you do a lip sync to a Cher song and not know the words?
I am just shocked.
I am shocked too. And I'm a little disappointed because it's one of the, like, it's one of those staples of drag that have been around for decades that I feel like even queens who maybe feel like they're too young or hip or cool for Cher kind of know that song because it's been worked into every production number ever. So it was weird to me and strangely disappointing to see somebody that didn't know it and didn't take the time to learn it. That's what I learned on all three seasons of Drag Race that I've done, is you may think that you nailed it, but you can never be quite too sure that you are not going to have to lip sync for your life. So you should always know it. It's part of the job.
Everybody's supposed to learn the song just in case, yes. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, everybody gets it. It's on the iPod. You have access to that song and you know what it's going to be for at least 2 days. So take a couple minutes just to learn that 3-minute song, you know?
Yeah, because that she really was giving until they zoomed in and you could actually tell that she didn't know the words. I was like, oh, she's got this. She's staying, but...
It's kind of an epidemic right now, though, honestly, because, you know, I do get to travel all over the world and I watch drag. And I say it's such a regional sport, and it really is, because it's approached differently everywhere you go. But the one consistency is the newer the entertainer, typically the less and less they know the words to the songs. Because a lot of people think, oh, all I've got to do is kick and split and death drop and do that. That's great. All those things are great, but that's like adding salt and pepper to a meatloaf. You know, like, exactly. You've got to have the actual meatloaf in order to pepper it up. So it's all about the balance of kind of learning where you need to focus your time and your energy.
So one thing I wanted to ask you about was Ursula. There was a real movement to get you cast as Ursula in the Little Mermaid remake. So can you take me back to your childhood and what your sort of Ursula origin story is?
Yes. So the first movie I ever saw in a movie theater was in 1989. I went to see The Little Mermaid. And we went because my next door neighbor who was also my best friend at the time. She was the only other kid that lived near me. Her name was Pammy. And she had long red hair. I mean, like long, went down past her ass red hair, just gorgeous. And she wanted to go because that was the point in time where like redheads were really made fun of. Nobody embraced them. Everybody was like, oh, redheads have no souls. The gingers are the devils and all that kind of stuff. And I think that that's also kind of why I really embraced that when I started drag, because I always did feel like more of an outsider in just everyday life. So I wanted to take it and kind of turn it into something and celebrate it, but I digress. So she wanted to go see Little Mermaid because she's a redheaded princess, and we're watching it and she's just obsessed with Ariel. And I'm like, I don't know. She's kind of whiny to me. She's got all this stuff. Isn't it neat? But she's still whining because her life's not complete. So then all of a sudden I hear this voice that starts talking like this. And then this glamorous creature just kind of wanders into the scene. And everybody thought she was so ugly and grotesque and mean. And I didn't see that when I looked at her. I saw like this gorgeous woman with a like a backless, strapless gown, form-fitted, painted for the gods, hair coiffed. She just looked so spectacular and was so in control of what she wanted. She knew what the goal was and she knew how to get there. And I found something really powerful about that because I was heavy set and it always felt like anybody who was heavier, anybody who was plus size was immediately not worth being in a position of power, not worth supporting. They were automatically bad. And I didn't see that when I saw her. And I didn't know until a couple years later, when I accidentally saw Pink Flamingos for the first time, that she was divine. And divine meant so much to me as this overweight queer child that didn't have a place to fit in. So it made a lot of sense that my first like girl crush was Ursula, and I wanted to be her my whole life. So it was really exciting when all these petitions and articles and everything started popping up about this is why Ginger Min should be Ursula in the new movie. And I never thought anything would come of it. But of course, it caught the attention of executives at Disney. They reached out. There was correspondence. I had auditions. We did all these things. And I feel like I made it pretty far into the process. But I knew in the back of my head, I was like, no matter how perfect I am for this, or no matter how many people are on my side, this still has to be an international release.
Yes.
It has to go to places where drag and homosexuality and anything under the LGBTQIA+ umbrella is not only not celebrated, but is also a crime. So yeah. I knew that there was a very slim chance that I was actually going to be able to do the role, but I was very pleased and proud that I made it as far as I did. And I love Melissa McCarthy so much.
Yeah. That if you're going to lose to someone. Really,
yeah. It didn't hurt to lose it to her.
And now, she did such hurt, a good.
No, it hurt that they made her look the way that she did.
Oh yeah. That's a different conversation.
I didn't understand. I didn't understand the long sleeves and the matronly collar. She looked like a mother of the bride more than like this grotesque glamour that I just love so much.
You're so right. Like we want with Ursula, like we do want titties out a little bit, you know.
Yeah.
We need to see
we want bingo wings. Like that's my favorite part about Ursula is she is all of these things that people think are not glamorous, and she makes them in your face beautiful. I love that. Love that part of her.
I do too. And I was just going to say, I mean, I think Melissa McCarthy did such a great job just in press about the movie paying homage to divine, recognizing that like this is a drag character and it's an honor that I am getting to play it, you know?
Yeah, well, and AFAB drag is one of my favorite types of drag. I've been obsessed with it for years. I'm from Orlando where we have Venus Envy and she's like the premier AFAB queen. I love, to me, drag is about like this expression and celebration of femininity, at least female presenting drag is. And I think there's nothing more exciting than when you see somebody who is hyper feminine take that and crank it up to 100 and really kind of turn it on its head. To me, like, that's what's really exciting. So I was definitely behind her in the drag aspect. I wish that the team would have embraced the drag a little bit more for her.
Right. Yeah, they could have used you behind the camera if they weren't going to have you in front of the camera advising at the very least.
Right. I could have done her makeup. I couldn't have done any worse.
Exactly. Well, you know, Maleficent is a thing. Maybe there's an Ursula movie down the line and we can finally see Ginger Minge as Ursula.
That's the thing, too. It's like Ursula is one of those characters. She's one of the most iconic Disney villains of all time. She's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. I know that there's going to be a million more opportunities and my time to play her will come. I think, honestly, and I'm hoping that there will be another Broadway revival of Little Mermaid at some point, and I'll get to combine my love of Ursula and my love of live theater and play her on Broadway.
You know, just that your outlook on this and just like your sort of general positivity makes me curious about what your relationship to spirituality is or where that kind of optimism comes from.
You know, I write about this a lot in my book. I write about a lot in my book too. Like, just not just this, but to me, I was raised in such a very staunch, strict, military-esque Southern Baptist home, where I was told, don't talk, don't make eye contact, don't embarrass us, for the love of God, do not speak unless you're spoken to. So I didn't have a voice growing up. I felt like I had nobody on my side. I felt like everything that I did was wrong. And it wasn't until I got a little bit older and I stumbled into drag through theater that I suddenly felt liberated. And I suddenly felt like I had found a voice that had never existed before. And in that moment, I went, well, this is obviously who I'm supposed to be. And if I'm created in God's image and I'm supposed to be a reflection of his love and da 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 da, all these things that is hammered into your head, right alongside the fact that you're too fat, you're too feminine, and you're not going to ever be good enough. I had to realize that if I was stepping into this and I was discovering this and this is what I was good at, this must be what whoever my God is wanted from me and created me to be. So it was a really long and painful separation from the church. And then once I got away, it's kind of like one of those abusive relationships where you don't see the actual abuse or its effects while you're in it. It's not until you have the clarity of being away and being an outsider of the situation that you get to look and go, this is wrong and this should have never happened. So how do I fix this and make it work for me? And I decided I am spiritual. I am religious. I was raised that way. I feel that way. I feel like I have a great relationship with whoever my God may be. But I knew that all of the teachings of the church were not necessarily true. And I remember thinking from a very long time ago, from a very young age, that the Bible is not the word of God. The Bible is not written by God. The Bible is stories told by men who supposedly had heard about them from God, and the telephone trickle-down effect over hundreds of years. So I decided to completely throw out everything I had learned from the church and go on my own kind of quest to figure out what felt right to me, what brought me peace, what brought me joy, and what kind of centered me in my clarity. And I learned exactly what I had to do. I had to pray. I had to speak out into the universe. And I had to start to compartmentalize all the different parts of me, all the different thoughts I had, all the different things that were bothering me, and approaching them on a one-by-one basis. So I am very spiritual. I would consider myself somewhat religious, but not in an organized religion sort of way.
And if you're talking about all that in Southern fried sass, then this is clearly much, much more than a cookbook.
Oh yeah, the cookbook's just an angle. You know, I was hired to write my life story, and I thought, well, if I can do anything, it's talk about myself. And then I sat down and I just stared at the blank screen for hours, and I went, I know what my life is. I know what I've been through, but I don't know what the commonality is between me and the reader. I don't know what the jumping off point is. And then my grandmother passed away. And when she did, you know, she wasn't a woman of means. She didn't have a whole lot, but she had her recipe box, which was her prized possession. And everybody in the family wanted it, but she left it to me. And that's because my whole life I spent with her in the kitchen cooking. It's where I learned my life lessons. It's where I got my confidence. She's the type of savior that wouldn't swoop in and save you, but she would give you the tools to save yourself. Hmm. So as you got older, you understood more and more about what was okay to expect for yourself and when you should step in and say, that's not good enough. And I decided to split up the recipes with my mom, my sister, and my aunt. And as we were going through them, we're laughing and we're crying, and it's bringing up all these, not just memories, but these stories of things that have happened over the last 80 years. You know, stories about my family that I had never even heard. And then things that I hadn't thought about in years and years and years. So I thought, oh, food is such a universal thing. Food is my love language. I've learned in my travels, even when you can't communicate with somebody verbally, you can learn so much about them and who they are and what their culture is by the food they share with you. So I said, the food is the in. That's the jumping off point. That's the through line. And then we started weaving that through with my life story. And I always say, like, on Drag Race, you get to know us a little bit. You get the breadcrumbs of who we are as people. But there's so many of us in an hour-long format or an hour and a half, however long the episodes may be, that there's not enough time to really get the full story, even if you're watching Untucked. So right. I wanted to fill in the gaps between those little dots. And that's exactly what this book is. It's my philosophy on life. It's my advice. I tell people all the time, like, I am not going to tell you what you should do, but I'm going to tell you what I did and why you should probably not do that, because 9 times out of 10, I make wrong decisions, but I learn from them. And I think that that's what we're here for. We're here to make mistakes. We're here to learn, and we're here to kind of tell the next group of people coming up after us, it's going to be totally fine. You can fall flat on your face. Just know that there's going to be people there to pick you up and help you.
And I know you sent a copy to Ron DeSantis. I hope he sent a thank you card or acknowledged that gift in some way.
I sent a whole case of autographed books to Ron DeSantis's office. Never heard a word back.
What?
I did make it onto the banned list in Florida, which I was very proud of.
Oh,
actually.
Yeah.
But the thing about it was, yeah, it's kind of a cute little headline. It's a stunt, whatever. But I genuinely have felt that if you could get a book like this into the hands of somebody who doesn't know who we are or understand why we do what we do or what makes us tick or doesn't like us simply because we are us, maybe they can skim through it. Maybe they won't even know. Maybe they just pick it up and start reading it and they learn that we have a whole lot more in common than we don't.
Yeah.
And if we just stop and learn a little bit about each other, maybe we can have more effective conversations that lead to changes that help everybody and not just one side or the other. So that's my goal with this. I know it's a lofty goal, but I have been trying to get it into the hands of bigots and people who don't like us just so maybe they can learn more about us. And if you still don't like me after you read the book, that's totally fine, but at least you have a bigger, clearer picture of who I am and what makes me tick, so that you're really disliking me for me and not just something that's so surface level, you know?
So your show, The Broadsway, it's you and Gidget Galore. It's coming to New York. Give us a little teaser of what we can expect.
It's an hour long. There are 24 musical numbers, big Broadway show-stopping hits, and 20 costume changes in that hour. Wow. There is a 5-minute medley where we do 10 songs from 10 different musicals, and it's a game we play with the audience on top of doing the quick costume changes, running in and out and doing all 10 musicals in 5 minutes. There, I go from Norma Desmond to one of the Von Trapp kids, to Mama Rose, to Roxy Hart from Chicago, boom, 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 just in succession. There is something for everybody in the show. If you love Broadway, we sing all of your favorite classic Broadway tunes. If you hate Broadway, we make fun of all of your favorite classic Broadway tunes. There is literally not a moment in the show that is dull or underwhelming or will make you want to tune out. You from the jump, it is so much fun. It's in your face. It is a good time. And we have been getting standing ovation after standing ovation from audience after audience. It's great. And I just want to share that joy with everybody because the world's been crazy. I don't know if you've peeked outside the window lately, but the world's just been crazy. And there's just been, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but it feels like since Christmas, going into the first of the year, the whole world has just felt kind of oppressive. And I know that my seasonal depression has kicked into high gear, and this show has been helping me really work through that and rediscover the joy. And there's nothing like sharing laughs and fun with a whole room full of people.
Well, just getting to talk to you for this brief time has already helped my seasonal depression. So,
I'm so
grateful. And by the way, if you're not in New York, there is a live stream option to see the Broadsway. If you go to thegreenroom42.com, you can get your tickets for the live stream version, for the live version. It's the Green Room 42 in New York, February 10th, 11th, 12th. And the book is Southern Fried Sass. Ginger Minj, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you for having me. I always love coming back and being able to do stuff with World of Wonder.
I mean, we're your biggest fans.
I know. And I love that. Well, I love it because it's such a family. Yeah, I know we're getting off on another tangent here, but you know, there's something about being able to come back home and see those people that have been there from the beginning, just give them a hug and just, you know, you love each other and you support each other, even when you fight. So I'm excited
That's
to be
back.
That's
the WOW fam.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Ginger.
You're so welcome. Thank you.
That is our show. Please do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram at HomophiliaPod. Homophilia is a World of Wonder production, music by Ben Wise. Our executive producer is Renee Colvert. Our associate producer is Jess Walensky, and our audio engineer is Justin Mattson. Many thanks to Michael Pressman and everyone at World of Wonder.